Hello, and welcome to Mega City Book Club, the podcast all about collected editions from the galaxy's greatest comic, 2000 AD. I'm Eamon Clark, and my guest this time, it's a welcome return from a chap way back from episode 5, Steve Green, the co-director and co-writer of the upcoming Strontium Dogs Search and Destroy film. Welcome back, Steve.
Hi, Eamon. Thanks for having me.
This time, instead of 2000 AD stories, we do recent acquisitions. And I know you've managed to snag a set of the Planet Replica badges.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of picked them up at the 40th. Dan had a few on sale, sort of like boxed up. He's also sort of selling them individually. I picked up a set of those. I mean, we'd already had some which we were giving out, the Strontium Dog sort of ones as freebies, which Steve Stellachini had sort of made. So it's a bit of a funny situation that we sort of, we're friends with Dan, but we sort of did want to sort of like, take money out of his pocket, but like, yes, giving away sort of stuff. But it's interesting sort of, I mean, I'm not much of a collector, but I've got a bit of an interest in sort of seeing how things sell, and just from a sort of like a wider point of view. And he's also done a set of Rogue Trooper biochips, which sort of sold out, very, very quickly. And speaking to Dan, he said that, those sold nearly as much as the Dread stuff, which is quite surprising considering Dread is the thing that's always quoted, the thing that sells, and everything else is, is quite a bit sort of lower down. But I think sort of possibly, the lack of any other Rogue Trooper sort of stuff probably means it's a bit less saturated than, Dread badges.
Yes.
There'll be lots of Dread badges over the years, but the ones he's done, are great, and they're very, 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 very good value. So, sort of have a look. I've sort of chatted with him. I think he's doing a round two of different sort of like badges. But those have all got to be sort of like, Run Past Rebellion and see what's sold and, see what's approved. But, just keep an eye on the Planet Replicas page.
Yes, Planet Replicas, they put out lovely stuff. I know they've got other things coming in the pipeline that they've hinted with pictures on Facebook and so on. But, yeah, the badges look lovely. You got the complete box set.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's sort of like, it's nice sort of like, collect some people and just sort of pick up, I mean, the individual badges are like £2.50 plus whatever postage. And I think, people like to have like a nice box set, for the sort of, for the collectors amongst them. And then other people like casually, just want a biochip or a Strontium Dog badge or a Dread badge. They can sort of like pick those up, and also they're sort of like, they're enamel or metal sort of like one, so they're quite sort of quite nice finish to them.
Yeah, I've got my SD badge, which, as you say, Stephen was giving out with the packs at one of the preview screenings of Search Destroy at Thought Bubble last year. And obviously, yeah, we'll be talking about Search Destroy later on. But we've got a very Strontium Dog theme for this episode. So tell us, let's get to the book. What have you chosen for us for your second appearance on Mega City Book Club?
Right, so this is the Strontium Dog Search Destroy Agency Files 1. So it's, I guess, a companion sort of to the Dread Case Files. They've gone with this sort of themed sort of collection, so basically collecting right from the beginning, sort of from his first appearance in Star-Lord up to what's the last story in Boo-Boo and the Bad Boys, or sorry, the Bad Boys bust,
yes,
in 2000 AD. And it also collects a few of the annual, and I think there might be summer special sort of collection, usually not drawn by Carlos.
Yes, there are a few other artists. We'll get to that in a moment. As you say, we've got the first 22 issues, or in fact the only 22 issues of Star-Lord, although there's a couple of gaps where I think there was a couple of issues where Strontium Dog didn't appear. And then we've got Prog 86, where it folds into 2000 AD, and we've got stories running right the way up until Prog 197 in this volume. Plus, as you say, we've got a few annual stories from Star-Lord.
You've done better research than me.
Well, I'm just looking at the flyleaf. So we've got, obviously, writers John Wagner and Alan Grant. Obviously, Carlos Esquerra, but we'll also find artwork in here by Ian Gibson, Brendan McCarthy, and Keith Page, who's...
I've never sort of seen any other sort of... any other sort of work of his, so...
He's not one of the most memorable artists that's appeared, I'm afraid. But we'll be talking a lot about Carlos, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think for most people, and me included, sort of Carlos is Strontium Dog, so it's quite hard to sort of like to see anybody else, drawing Strontium Dog. I think Brendan McCarthy does a good... His sort of organic style sort of suits it, but I think you're always going to be having to emulate sort of Carlos's sort of style, and I'm just happy to see whenever Carlos draws it, I'm just happy to see it.
Yeah, absolutely. So Star-Lord. Now I know you're a 2000 AD prog winner, so you started in 2000 AD, and then a year later, 78, we get Star-Lord, which I know from Steve McManus's book was intended to be this wonderful monthly glossy science fiction magazine, and then IPC sort of like said no, and it became a weekly, perhaps slightly better paper than 2000 AD, but not much. Were you reading Star-Lord at the time, or did you just get it when it started?
I can't answer. I'm sure I did read it, because I'm sure I remember Mind Wars rather than Strontium Dog. I don't think I had all the issues. I'm pretty sure I had like some, and maybe it was sort of mum and dad sort of like saying, right, pick one. I was like, all right, I'll go with 2000 AD then. I don't know. I'm pretty sure I picked up sort of like some, but it was one of those sort of things that, I probably dipped in and out of, and then when it sort of merged in, I mean, I did sort of pick up long afterwards some of the early stories, getting some sort of like back issues of Star-Lord. I don't have any memories of the stickers, so but obviously I have like abiding memories of Biotronic stickers and space spinners and things like that. I don't ever recall having the stickers from Star-Lord, so I probably sort of dipped in probably a couple of issues in after they stopped giving away the freebies.
Right, okay. And I think it was John Wagner by himself originally who sort of like created the character.
I mean, although it's got the T.B. Grover sort of, I don't think T.B. Grover is necessarily John and Alan together. I think that was just a John Wagner pseudonym, so I'm not sure at what point Alan sort of started his contributions to Strontium Dog. I'd have to look it up and sort of see where it is, but I'm pretty sure John's always like the one who's credited along with Carlos as the creator.
Yes, and I know Kelvin Gosnell was the editor, and he brings in Steve McManus to help work on it as well. And I think they came up with the name, John and Kelvin, I think between them, came up with the title Strontium Dog.
Right, right.
And, if we look at the early Star-Lord issues, those sort of mostly sort of short one and done or couple of episode stories, but it really, it gives us everything we need to know about Johnny Alpha and Wolf Sternhammer and their sort of... the world of Strontium Dog. It's all there in those Star-Lord issues, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that sort of doesn't really appear until a lot later is the doghouse. Right. I mean, although it's sort of I think it sort of probably has like a little bit of the interior or something like that. It's not really established as a base, and the whole sort of UK-centric sort of like nature, I mean, that doesn't sort of like pop up until sort of Portrait of a Mutant. Really, sort of, so it's because you never get the sense that Johnny's English or American, or obviously you get the sense that Wolf is from Scandinavia, but other than that, Johnny's sort of like a bit of an enigma, and there is a bit of a running gag that it's sort of like this sort of Wild West, but not quite, a bit like a Desperate Dan sort of version of the Wild West, because it's on other planets and it's maybe like an English version, and it's trying to work out whether, you know, Johnny sort of, sometimes he's sort of like, you know, a bit, you know, cowboy sort of language, and sometimes he's not, you know. It's so trying to figure out where he is. It's all left a bit vague. And, you know, later on, sort of like when they try to do the reboot with the Krela conspiracy, they seem to sort of like jettison a lot of the UK stuff. I wonder whether that was because of it was coming from a TV pitch, and we'll make it a bit more Americanized or acceptable to an international audience, you know, without all the sort of idiosyncrasies of like a UK based strip.
I think it's volume two of the SD Agency files that we get Portrait of a Mutant in, isn't it? And then we get the backstory.
Yeah, that takes up quite a lot of the. That's pretty long sort of story, that Portrait of a Mutant.
Yeah, but here we have at the start, we've got Johnny and Wolf, bounty hunters, strontium dogs with their SD badges. We get, you know, introduced to their weaponry.
Yeah.
We get the distinctive look, the character design from Carlos, you know, Johnny and his helmet and his pads, and the gigantic wolf with his happy stick. Yeah, it's all great stuff. I thought, you know, looking at them now, I thought that the Star-Lord issues stories were very much more trying to be science fiction based.
Yeah.
And perhaps some of the, you know, you've mentioned the Western elements. That seems to come in more once we get to the 2000 AD era.
Yeah.
That would fit for Star-Lord, which was, you know, trying to be very much science fiction, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think the only one that sort of really goes for the Western one is the Two-Faced Terror, the one with Billy Joe.
Right, yes.
And the smiling Chuck Waller, and you know, you've got the whole thing with the bikes and the sort of, you know, it's a dusty planet, and that's pretty much the only one that's sort of like in the Star-Lord run that fits in with the sort of typical sci-fi Western sort of like genre. But it was interesting because when we were doing the film, we sort of, you know, we looked back and you saw all these sort of things that you never really noticed before, like how the helmet sort of like changed from the Star-Lord sort of era. It's, you know, it's got these all extra, you know, lumpy bits, and if you look in the back of the collector's edition, there's a sort of like prototype sort of poster where the helmet's sort of different again. It's got these other little antenna bits, and
yes.
It's even more insect-like. But yeah, I mean, speaking to Carlos, sort of, you know, about the sort of the costume design, he said he seems to be going for this sort of like waspish look to it, you know, and also sort of, you know, the stripes that tend to show up in Johnny's sort of costume later on. But I mean, the costume itself, it does sort of like change a lot, you know. The Westinghouse blaster sort of changes from strip to strip, you know.
Yes, sort of, the length of the barrels changes a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, length of the barrels sort of change a lot. So it's sort of, you know, trying to work out. It's a lot more fluid than Dredd's costume.
Yeah.
Even, you know, allowing for different artists. I mean, Carlos sort of changes it how he likes it. So sure. It makes it, you know, quite tough to sort of in one way sort of like, okay, which version do we go for? Also, it's sort of, you know, people say, oh, it's not like that. So we'll, you know, try and pick one that's that is like. So we sort of pick one and sort of like, you know, tend to sort of like stick with that.
Yeah, I'm looking at the pinup, as you say, from Star-Lord issue 20, so only a couple of issues before it disappears. But Star-Lord issue 20, pinup by Carlos Ascara, Johnny Alpha. I'm sure people will know the image. It's got the slightly different-looking Electronux appearance.
I don't know whether it's an Electronux or whether it's just like a bladed weapon, or, you know, just
thing in his left hand, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then, as you say, the helmet is more bulbous at the side and has these weird sort of antennae coming in under his eyes.
Yeah.
I know at the 40th, you mentioned, you know, picking up the badges at the 40th, but there was also that Carlos limited edition print of the two Dredds, the sort of...
Yeah, oh, yeah, pick that one up as well.
So, I mean,
yeah.
That's a lovely image of, like, you know, the original Judge Dredd uniform compared to how Carlos draws him now. And, you know, looking at this, I almost want the same for Johnny Alpha. I want a side-by-side of the two Johnnies, you know.
I mean, Vice Press have done a Strontium Dog one. I don't know whether this actually been on sale. I mean, I saw an image of it ages ago, but I think it was a coloured one, and I sort of tended to prefer just like the black and white sort of grayscale sort of like prints.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'd be great to see a side by side. I think there was another sort of like poster of Wolf as well, which was sort of a bit of a, I don't think it's collected here, but there was a one, and he was the costume was a bit different there. So obviously that's evolved with the he did start off with the Gronk skin jacket,
the famous Gronk skin, the great honour to wear a Gronk skin.
Yeah, I mean that's a pretty bleak thing for a kid's comic. So like, you know, you have like this sort of cute alien character, you know, it's a bit like George Lucas sort of having Jar Jar die at end of episode one and then having him skinned.
Yes. Although many fans would hope that had happened.
Yeah, yeah. Pray for a sequel. Yeah. But it's interesting sort of seeing the how it's all like develops, and also, I mean, all the reprints so far have been black and white, but obviously in the original Star-Lord, you got this sort of colour spread. So I'm sort of hoping that we might get a special edition, a nice hardback. You know, if they could sort of do that for the this Hachette collection goes ahead.
Oh right, of course. Now that might be where we could get it, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I know they sort of like say that, you know, like hardbacks are expensive, for Rebellion. You know, Rebellion don't tend to do hardbacks, and you know, apart from sort of special occasions like the Cursed Earth sort of uncensored editions. But I'm very sort of averse to sort of like buying reprints unless it, you know, offers something new. So yeah, if they did like a hardback with these sort of color spreads restored, that would be. That'd be lovely.
Yeah.
I mean, they've done it into all the bits and pieces with the. I mean, there's a couple of stories in the back of this that they've reprinted in Free Comic Book Day, in colour.
Right.
So you know they have done sort of scans here and there, but I don't think the actual scanning. I mean, there's not that much. I mean, it's mainly the Star-Lord stuff, because I think looking at some of the artwork, the first two pages tend to be colour spread, and then I think it's a grayscale wash. Or a sort of green wash, I think.
Right.
If they could, you know, do all those sort of, you know, restore the sort of Journey into Hell sort of like, you know, spreads, then yeah, I'd be very happy.
Right. Okay. Because as you say, in Star-Lord, Strontium Dog got the sort of middle two pages colour spread for the first two pages. And then, yeah, as you say, it was a sort of colour wash. And that's for this volume, it's all been taken down to black and white. So for the Star-Lord issues particularly, I think, you know, the colour ones or what the pages that were originally colour, taking them down to black and white can make them look a little bit dark and muddy, I think.
Yeah, I mean, having seen like some of the original pages and, I mean, some of the original artwork from, you know, time to time, Carlos has always sort of had very vibrant sort of painted work. So, you know, losing that to black and white, it's a bit of a shame. Yeah, I'd really love to see that sort of, you know, that done. You know, a nice original sized sort of version, you know, in colour.
If we get the Hachette 2000 AD collection that we're all hoping for, as we record, it's still going through its test phase. I mean, like the Judge Dredd, they've sort of printed or they've collected stories thematically. I would guess they might go for something like Portrait of a Mutant as the first Strontium Dog volume. But if we could get a hardback of the early Star-Lords restored to their colour, that would be, as you say, that would be lovely. We'd double dip for that, wouldn't we?
Yeah, I mean, even from a digital point of view, I think what I'd like to see is them offer sort of upgrades to digital editions.
Yeah.
You know, all the digital editions, I think, are just, you know, black and white, you know, so they're the same sort of thing. So I don't know when they scanned them originally, whether they sort of scanned them in sort of grayscale or scanned them in colour and then dropped the colour. But if the scans exist, it might be a way to get people to, you know, if not rebuy, but get a little bit of extra income.
Okay. If Robo Keith is listening.
Yeah. he's switched off by this point.
And, you know, just to go back to it, on a recent episode, I was talking with Pete Wells, and he was telling me about, you know, how Carlos is a genius of character design with the Dread uniform, which, you know, shouldn't work, which John Wagner thought wouldn't work. But, of course, it's just perfect for comics.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's the same here with Johnny Alpha and Wolf. Just produces genius designs, which work so well in the comics. We'll talk a little bit later about interpreting it, uniforms for film. But it's great stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they're sort of so easy to recognise. You know, a lot of people say, you know, if you can recognise a silhouette, that's a sign of a good character design. And if you sort of distill sort of like Wolf down to the, you know, big guy with a beard and a hammer and, you know, Johnny with his funky helmet or his sort of like mop top. Considering how sort of how fiddly the costume and how detailed the costume is compared to, you know, Batman or Superman, I mean, Carlos does make a lot of work for himself.
He does, doesn't he?
it's the sort of thing where, you know, if somebody designed that character for you, you know, you would hate them forever, you know. So it's I've got to draw all this, you know, but. The things I like is he's also got it's not always as, you know, the fact that it's always not all the same costume that, you know, you get like Johnny where he's got like a bit of a sort of like, you know, long coat in the Galaxy Killers, and in other ones he's got like a waistcoat and sort of so, you know, it does change. I sort of like, you know, I think it's all like a Carlos just does it, so, you know, I don't have to draw everything the same, but yeah, there is a sort of like a core element of the sort of on Johnny, you know, with the sort of helmet usually, and you know, the sort of asymmetric shoulder pads and the stripy top. Yeah. Everything else seems a bit sort of up for grabs.
So as you say, Carlos has made a lot of work for himself, but he's, he's up there with Ron Smith as one of the fastest, you know, he's the fastest pen in the West in a way, because still his output is phenomenal. And back then when he was churning these out. And I know we've got the Apocalypse War coming up on a later episode in a couple of weeks' time, I think. And the stuff he was producing so quickly, and yet it's phenomenal artwork.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at the sort of the multi-parters, sort of once you get into the sort of 2008 merger, sort of the Galaxy Killers, I'm not sure sort of how many sort of like parts it is, but it must be a 10, 12 parter, I think, sort of. I think the Journey into Hell, I don't know how many, again, that's another 16
parts, so 14, 16 or something like that.
I mean when you look at sort of the other artists sort of in 2018, who, I mean, all the other ones, they're sort of notorious, you know, like Cursed Earth and City of the Damned, all the sort of like the Dread epics. The Apocalypse War is sort of like the only one that
one artist the whole
is one artist. I mean, Henry Flint is the only one I can sort of think of that, you know, maybe sort of can sort of keep it up. keep up with Carlos. I mean, Greg Staple did Dark Justice, but, you know, that took a long time, fully painted and nearly broke him. So it
took two years, I think.
I mean, sort of Carlos's sort of work rate is amazing.
Absolutely, you know, one of the true heroes of 2000 AD. We're so lucky to have him. And, you know, long may he continue to produce work of this quality.
Well, I mean, I've had sort of like one commission. I've got another commission on the go, and it's just incredible to sort of see it, and you know, the sort of like, you know, the work he puts into it, and even just sort of seeing him sketching at the cons. I think he did about 40, 50 sort of sketches at the 40th. And, you know, he did even more at LFCC sort of like last year, and it's just incredible sort of like, you know, he's drawn sort of like Dread and sort of Alpha so many times, you know, he could probably do it blindfold. It's just amazing to see him at work.
Great. Okay, so we've got, as you say, the 2000 AD merger. From Prog 86, Star-Lord folds in, and we get then Strontium Dog, and it's multi-part stories. It becomes, you know, I found that the sort of Western elements creep in more than had been in the Star-Lord issues.
Yeah.
It's much more recognisably the Strontium Dog that we know now, I think, in terms of, you know, the look of the strips.
Yeah, you do. I mean, it's interesting. So, say in the first story, it's a little bit of repetition with the Papa Porker sort of story. So you've got the Galaxy Killers, and that's sort of like an expanded, you know, sort of space pirate or, you know, battle fleet type sort of thing. So it's but it sort of like takes that and sort of takes that and runs with it. And looking through it, I sort of like noticed that Wolf's thing of about, you know, his obsession with cucumbers, replacing words with cucumbers and phrases with cucumbers, it's not actually his to begin with. It's used by one of the aliens in that, Sergeant Kark.
I've got that page open in front of me as you speak. Yes, you think Kark stupid, think me not see you, but Kark smart, smart as cucumber.
So Wolf obviously thought, I like that. I'll take that. So it's interesting, and also it's funny that this sort of like, this first major story, they ditch pretty much all the weapons. They ditch Johnny's helmet. Wolf doesn't even have his happy stick.
Yeah.
So this is a long story John seems to do this or like a bit. Well, all right, well, we've got all these toys. I'll get rid of them.
Yes.
Ask Greg Staples, you know, so like, you know, Greg sort of said, oh, can I design a Mark III Lawgiver? And sort of, you know, John did, yeah, okay. And then sort of like made it a pile of crap. And
yes.
And sort of destroyed it sort of in the first couple of episodes. So, John's got form for that.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, of course, what they had to do was reintroduce Strontium Dog to new readers because, you know, 2000 AD readers might not have been picking up Star-Lord, which, as we say, only managed 22 issues. So they reintroduced the sort of concept right from the start.
Yeah.
They reintroduced the weaponry. And then, as you say, they have them ditch the weaponry once they get hijacked by the Galaxy Killers. And they have to sort of like get through without a lot of their resources. I mean, John Wagner again, you know, Carlos making things difficult for himself. John also writing himself in and out of corners quite successfully.
We'll probably pick up a little bit on this on the when talking about Search Destroy. But I mean, one problem we did find was, Johnny's gadgets do tend to make him a bit all powerful. And it becomes a case of, oh, why didn't you use that? Why don't you use that? You know, yes. So it is one way to sort of make things a bit simpler. Say, right, you know, we'll put that out of reach. And you can sort of see where John's similarly in later Strontium Dog stories, where it's like, right, okay, we'll make time bombs really expensive, or we'll, you know, make them banned, you know, because they are a bit sort of a bit of a panacea to sort of like, you know, to solve a problem. So there's got to be some sort of like risk involved, or as John does, he just sort of says, right, these are too powerful to let them fall into alien hands, so we'll get rid of them.
Yeah,
and then we'll sort of go from there.
We'll have a multi-part story without their weapons.
Yeah,
and I think they also, there's some variation in what Johnny's eyes can do as the stories progress. His mutant power perhaps becomes less powerful in the later stories than it was in the early sort of science fiction episodes.
Yeah, well, it becomes a little bit sort of, the problem with sort of Anderson's side division, where somebody can interrogate somebody and know that they're lying, or even, I think there's one case later on in the Willy Branco story where, you know, he's some. He can, you know, read somebody's mind after they're, you know, pick up latent sort of brain activity after they're dead, and it's you could, you know, there was a point in like one of the recent Mutant War sort of stories where somebody was killed, and they made a point that said, oh, Johnny, you can't sort of if only you weren't this way, you could have sort of brought, you know, you could have interrogated them. And so, well, you know, there's at least two ways. You got a time drogue and Johnny sort of powers that he could have found out what he needed to. And it's, we'll not worry about that anymore. So it's, it's one of these things where, you know, Johnny is a little on the all powerful sort of side of things compared to, say, Dredd. Dredd's just got his gun and his bike and he's hard, whereas Johnny's got a lot more sort of things to call on.
Yeah.
Which, you know, when you're sort of like 10 or whatever, you know, sort of, you just go, oh, it's cool and things like that. But then you sort of get a bit older and sort of read it and go, right, okay, you can see that can be, you know, it's a bit of a sort of Superman sort of like problem. Not quite that bad, but, you know, it's Johnny's only kryptonite seems to be a sort of level of guilt.
Yeah.
You know, moodiness and but he does seem to sort of pick up some sort of very he's got a terrible sort of head for business. looking at the end of Galaxy, you know, Killers, you know, so like, we're offering him this sort of really expensive super sort of like fast ship, and he says, oh, if we take that, you know, every bad guy will know we're coming, and that's really bad. So, yeah, okay, but you can still sort of like take it and flog it.
And he's forever getting a big payout at the end of a story, and then just basically handing it off to some poor begging mutant.
Yeah, he does it in the very, very first story. He sort of starts as he means to go on. It sets it up, you know, pretty much from the get go. You know, you got all the sort of time bombs and sort of and giving away his money.
Yes. And it's strange that Wolf Sternhammer as a Viking has got a better business head than Johnny, but yeah.
Yeah, sort of an endless sort of sense of frustration for Wolf, you know, it's sort of like never make any money this way.
Well, we mentioned some of the stories. You mentioned the Galaxy Killers as the sort of first 2000 AD run. Then you've got Journey into Hell, which we also touched upon, which is quite, in places, quite a bonkers story, but it's marvellous. I mean, Carlos gets to draw the devil and the four horsemen of the apocalypse, which is wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's also sort of one of the stories that introduces the other Strontium dogs as bad guys. So it's with Fly's Eyes Wagner.
Yeah.
So we've got that sort of that element of. I mean, it starts out sort of like, you know, the usual sort of stuff where him going up against. Officious sort of police ones, you know, treating mutants like scum, general sort of hick sheriffs. And then it sort of like takes this sort of really strange turn into hell.
Absolutely. Journey into Hell, the City of Lost Souls. It's just, if you've not read these stories recently, it's just fantastic stuff.
I think this one was my first introduction to the concept of like the horsemen of the apocalypse, and looking up and Carlos is like, you know, does such an amazing job, and it's I think the fact that's scary about this is like, you know, there's no escape. Even if you die, there's no escape. You'll come back to life, and just endless ways to torture people. You know, whether it's acid rain or being thrown into a river of flame, and you do get a few sort of revisits. To this kind of concept. I mean, Roadhouse is a similar sort of thing much, much later on, you know. But I mean, this is probably, you know, the equivalent in Dredd is City of the Damned, I guess.
Yes. As you say, a similar theme, the City of Lost Souls and the City of Damned. And the Gronks in there as well. Quite how the Gronks survives the journey to hell. who knows? But there you go.
Yeah, I'm sure if he knew what he was letting himself in for, he would have stayed with the dead body.
Absolutely, yeah. And you mentioned we've got sort of like rogue or bad SD agents, because we get the fabulous Weird Brothers in this one as well.
Yeah, you get sort of, Cuss, Hiss and Silent.
Silent, yeah. Fantastic stuff. Yeah, that's a great story. And then the hits keep on coming because we get the Death's Head story.
I think that's probably the first, I guess, modern Strontium Dog one. Because it's the first one in 2000 AD that's got the sort of like the Western sort of like vibe.
Yeah,
it's probably the most sort of, you know, if you said Strontium Dog, people would go that.
Yes,
and it's just, you know, it's amazing. It's got a great sort of. I mean, the fact that like the first bad guy, you go, okay, he looks quite hard. He's got four arms, you know. It's like, you know, like a big lunk, sort of like shaved head, and the guy that you're looking for, the actual bad guy that you're looking for, is this weedy looking guy called Willy Blanco. you know, who's the, you know, the real bad guy. And yeah, it's got a gruesome sort of spontaneous combustion, and it's just got some great lines, you know. It's,
yes, absolutely. Go for your guns. There's a literal sort of gunfight in the opening pages, as Johnny Alpha takes on Big Donkey, as he's known.
Yeah, Duncan Pizer, aka Big Donkey.
Yes, doesn't last very long, unfortunately.
yeah, and you can sort of see where you know, although sort of like, you know, Johnny's a, you know, a bounty hunter and a killer, you know, he's sort of like trying to take him in alive, and it's only the fact that Willie Blanco has sort of sabotaged these arms that, but he still gets the blame for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you still get this sort of gobby bystander, you know. I've seen enough. How long are we going to put up with this sort of thing? The freak incinerated him. And, of course, Wolf wades in and go play in the mud like good little verm.
And then, I mean, I'm looking at the opening page of episode or part three of Death's Head, and we get the skimmer. So we've got Johnny and Wolf and the Gronk on a skimmer wearing the goggles. We've got that marvellous skeleton with a sign hanging from its eye sockets.
Yeah.
I used to think I was bad until I discovered Willie Blanco.
Yeah.
It's fabulous. Just fabulous. Yeah. I mean, what a page to look at and to you know, if somebody is lucky enough to own that, that's fabulous.
Yeah, I've got one page of sort of one of the later ones, the Stone Killer sort of page from Carlos. Yeah, so it's sort of great to have that. But yeah, so, some of these older sort of pages, you know, be like wonderful sort of like, you know, just because it's got so many sort of associated memories with it. But yeah, sort of, you know, Death's Head is sort of. Yeah, we get more gadgets.
Yep.
Stage two of the tracer beam, which I don't think they've ever used anywhere else. So, and then the classic number four cartridge.
Yes, there it is, and it starts a landslide. Number four cartridge.
Yeah, so you've got the grand tradition of announcing what weapons you're going to use. So
it's a real comic thing, isn't it? Particularly a British comic thing.
Yeah.
You say what weapon you're about to use, and then you use it, and it's great. Yeah, I love that. Very visual, wonderful.
I mean, this is a lot, you know, it's a fantastic story, and it's I think sort of I got another one, a time shrinker. I see yet another one. There's sort of I mean, the time weaponries are sort of like pretty consistent, but sort of it's a bit like the sort of the time stretcher in Robo Hunter. It sort of accelerates time. And then we sort of, but it's probably got one of the best lines at the end of that. Wolf, you know, they've basically sort of killed the bad guy and just left with his skin. And it's, you know, when we claimed a reward, they will think we have skinned old Billy. And Johnny's line is, let them, we've done worse.
There's a Western line for you.
Yeah, it's just a sort of like, you know, badass sort of badass line, but...
You can sort of imagine 70s or 80s Clint Eastwood saying a line like that, can't you?
Yeah, it's sort of. I just wanted to jump back to the sort of the Galaxy Killers. There's one thing I've seen rereading it, and I've sort of not seen it sort of like done before. I mean, I'm sure it must have, and I've not seen it really done since. And it's the one where they're sort of they've stolen this sort of ship, and it's you know, you get sort of two panels where it's completely different locations where, but they continue the sort of conversation over it. And the only thing I can sort of remember is in like Austin Powers where they're doing the bit with the spaceship that looks like a penis.
Oh, right, yes.
Yeah. And it's so they're doing this, like, wait, it's not heading for us. It's heading straight for, and then it sort of cuts to another scene. You know, completely different characters. Us, it's heading for us. What's the fool playing at? And it's just, I've never seen that in comics sort of before. But I'm sure it must have been done, and I just sort of, it seemed like a very cinematic sort of thing to do.
Right, the Walrog Nuke Torp. Miles approaching fast, not heading for us. And then, as you say, he jumps the conversation.
Yeah,
in one panel.
It's just something that stood out when I.
Okay, so I'm keen for us to have time to talk about Search Destroy, but we just mentioned, you know, in this volume we also get another famous Strontium Dog story, the famous Schicklgruber grab, where they go back in time to nab Hitler from his bunker in Munich.
Yeah, this is a sort of thing. It's just like a neat thing of, if you travel back in time, would you kill Hitler? And, well, they kind of go back, but they go back after. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. You know, it's purely a punishment. So it's so that they're not trying to change the timelines. You know, World War II still takes place, but they're grabbing Hitler in the bunker. And because he, you know, according to the Committee of Ultimate Retribution, they send somebody back to get the worst war criminals in history. And
yes, a time warrant. Yeah.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that nobody knows who he is, or, you know, it's just sort of he's become an irrelevance by the 22nd century.
Yeah.
You know, they've had sort of like two nuclear wars, so, you know. This guy from the 20th century, yeah, sort of like Hitler or Hattler or Hilter or whatever his name was.
That's right, the Schicklgruber, as keeps calling him. Yeah,
yeah.
And of course, it's also the story. I mean, again, talking about dodgy or rogue SD agents, we get Sticks. That's right, the first of the Sticks brothers in their. Almost infinitely extendable family of Sticks.
I think it's become a useful thing, you know, because, you know, John tends to kill off his characters quite easily. So he obviously thought there was mileage in Sticks, even though he sort of like killed him off. So brings back the Sticks brothers and brings back the extended sort of like family sort of repeatedly. But they all, you know, they pretty much share the same sort of characteristics, and they're very taciturn. It's but yeah, it seemed to be a model a little over Lee Van Cleef.
Yes.
What the wide-brimmed hat, you know, sort of lizard-like sort of demeanor.
Yeah, the narrow eyes, the long face, the wide-brimmed hat. Yeah, quite right. I can see Lee Van Cleef in that sort of role. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think I can't remember where it was, but I think somebody. It might have been a post where it said like Sticks from the Van Cleef system.
Oh right. Oh so, great.
So there was a bit more of an obvious nod, and that's where it goes proper, you know, sci-fi western, you know, where you've got the, you know, the duster coat, and I noticed that sort of Sticks always seems to have like one hand in his pocket if he can help it.
Yeah,
you sort of look at it and just go, right, has he got another gun in there, or, you know, don't know whether that was an intentional sort of thing, but.
Again, it's great character design from Carlos, isn't it? I mean, he just looks fantastic. His sort of flat, long face, his flat nose, it's great.
And also, this is the introduction of Harvey as well. I mean, as an actual character, I think, he did sort of like cameo sort of in the early stories, but, you know, he wasn't named, and this is the actual time where he's given sort of something to do.
Yeah.
And basically be the guy running the doghouse, but also, the guy who's nominally in charge, but he's not really. He seems sort of like a subservient to the mutants. You know, Wolf knocked him out, Alpha sort of implants a post-agnostic suggestion, Sticks is putting the frighteners on him just to get this all, like, you know, get this all our job. So they're all sort of basically lying, cheating, playing dirty to get this million cred bounty.
Yes, he does get knocked about quite a bit in this story, doesn't he, poor Harvey? Yeah,
it's a great story, and it's one of those that, you know, people say, oh, like, if you're going to do a Strontium Dog sort of, you know, feature, so I'd probably do that. It's sort of, it's really weird and funny, and just the fact that you got Adolf Hitler getting a wolf's sock stuffed in his mouth to shut him up. It's
whenever he starts to rant and rave, Wolf sticks a sock in his mouth, the same old garbage,
yeah.
it's fantastic.
But yeah, it's a great volume. Sort of, you know, you can see the sort of like, the sort of like division between the sort of like the stories. You know, there's probably sort of like three parts. You know, you got the Star-Lord run, the first couple of 2000 AD stories like Journey to Hell, and then the sort of Willy Blanco Death's Head one, and that's when it sort of seems to sort of like really sort of hit its stride, and you sort of like know what you're getting with the Strontium Dog story.
Any other features or episodes or stories you want to pick out from this first volume before we move on?
The one is the Bad Boys bust. I think that was the one that they got into trouble with. Basically, the guy getting eaten alive.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yeah, please, Boobo, don't eat me. I'm a lawman. My meat's bound to be bad. You know, you give us wind, that's all. So, he got the cop on a spit. And you don't see anything sort of particularly explicitly, but that was enough to, I think it was like a Portsmouth Association sort of writing to 2000 AD. And it was one of those.
It did come from Portsmouth, didn't it? Yes.
Yeah.
I remember reading about that in Thrill Power Overload, the complaints they received about that episode that got them in trouble, yeah.
Yeah. Sort of Boobo and the Bad Boy, another sort of like great sort of set of characters, which they sort of revisit in a later story, very similar sort of characters called Darkus and the Howlers, these sort of big furballs with sort of nasty sort of baboon faces and lanky legs. It's... And also got, you know, a unique way of speaking. Now, the bad guys always seem to be quite minimalist. He's quite, you know, uses the word sap a lot. You know, zap the sap. Now you die, sap. So they're not known for, an extensive use of language. They sort of stick with what they know.
Yeah, absolutely. And they make great nasty bad guys for,
that
story. The Bad Boys bust, yeah. Okay, splendid. It's a marvellous volume. It tells you everything you need to know about, the setup of Strontium Dog from the beginning. We've got those, as we've said, those Star-Lord episodes, and then those great multi-part stories once it goes into 2000 AD. As you say, at the back of the book, we've got a few of the covers and a pin-up. We've also got some one-off stories that appeared in various Star-Lord annuals and summer specials. We've even got the Strontium Dog Star-Lord special quiz as well.
Right, yeah. You are a Strontium Dog.
That's it, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't taken that. I maybe should have got Matt and Kev to who are playing Johnny and Wolfie to see how
the quiz
they did
and get into character, yeah. All right. So let me get you to pick out your favourite story from this particular volume. If you could pick one to recommend, what would it be?
Well, I think probably Death's Head, just because that's the, if somebody said Strontium Dog, I go, yeah, that's what you'll get. It's got the gadgets, it's got some sort of great lines, it's got the sci-fi western sort of thing. It's either that or the Shickle Gruber Grab, just because of Sticks.
Yeah.
So it's probably a tie between those two.
I mean, they're two great stories. I'm going to go with the Shickle Gruber Grab, just because I think that's a fantastic story as well. As you say, the introduction of Sticks. But, I mean, both of them tell you perfect introductions to Strontium Dog.
Yeah.
And who knows, we may get to see them in a Hachette hardback at some point.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, hopefully. I mean, there's not been that many sort of reprints. I mean, Titan only did one volume at the sort of the original size. I think that, I'm not sure, you know, what that covered. I think that might have been just a few of those sort of 2000 AD sort of stories. But it's not been, you know, apart from those agency files, there's been very, very little sort of reprinted.
Okay, so we're going to play Grail Pages in a minute. But you mentioned you've got a Carlos commission. Was it a Johnny Alpha one or a Dread one?
Johnny Alpha one.
You have got a Carlos commission of Johnny Alpha. That's marvellous. Yeah. And what's he doing for you for your next commission?
I wanted him to do a sort of a pastiche of the Action cover that got Action pulled.
Oh, right, with the policeman.
Yeah. But instead of the kid with the bike chain, I wanted a fatty.
Right.
With a chain of sausages. So you've basically got like a citizen on the... It's basically a Dread version of the Action cover. And we did sort of like talk about sort of having Dread on the ground, but I think we just went with the same guy.
Right.
So it's the same guy, but instead of the police helmet, there's a judge helmet. So it's a sort of fatties on the rampage and like a sort of 800-pound version of the kid from the Action cover. Probably the same haircut. Right. But instead of a bike chain, he's flinging around a chain of sausages. I'm not sure why I went for that. It's just sort of, oh, that sounded quite, you know, quite funny to do.
Sounds perfect. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, well, I mean, Pete Wells has had his sort of his pasty themed, you know, ones. So yeah, there's obviously a bit of a food theme going through 2000 AD readers. I've no idea why.
We're men of a certain age. We like a pasty and a sausage. Yeah. Okay, so if you could, let's play Grail Pages. If we could get you any page or cover or pinup from this first volume of the Search Destroy Agency files, could you pick one? It's hard, I know, because there's so much marvellous Carlos work to look at.
Yeah, I think it's one with a, I think in Deathhead with the number 4 cartridge.
Oh, right, yes.
Yeah, I think something like that, just probably that, but I mean, yeah, trying to pick a favourite sort of Carlos sort of stuff, it's pretty hard going. I mean, it doesn't tend to do many sort of like big sort of splash pages in these. It's they're all sort of solely like, you know, telling the story and yeah, sort of trying to sort of, apart from maybe sort of some of the centre spreads in Star-Lord.
Okay, so if you're reading along at home, that is episode 3 of Death's Head, and it's the penultimate page. Johnny says, let's cut this short, number 4 cartridge.
Yeah.
And you've even got Johnny saying, dead as der cucumbers.
Yeah.
Marvellous page. Okay, great. Well, we'll grant you that one if we can get it for you. And okay. I'm actually going to go, you know, I've changed my mind, but I'm going to go for that pin-up from Star-Lord number 20.
Oh, right.
The early Johnny Alpha. Yeah. Just because it's interesting to see that early character design.
Yeah.
I mean, again, that page, if, you know, it would be far too expensive for me, I'm sure. But
Even if it... It's one of those ones that I don't think I've ever seen anybody mention it or having it. So, you know, no. It may not even exist anymore. But
I hope it wasn't one of the ones that was, you know, destroyed or treated so badly in those early days they were using artwork to mop up.
You think that sort of like the painted one, they might have at least given it a little bit of, it's colour, we might sort of might keep it.
Yeah.
But I'd be interested to know how many sort of variations of, sort of designs Carlos sort of goes through before he sort of settled on one. But that's a pretty cool one. Even though it sort of it sort of reminds me a little bit of those sort of Jeff Love sort of album covers from the 70s.
Yeah.
You know, where it said, right, we're going to do a non-copyrightable sort of like version of Johnny Alpha. So it'll make it look a bit like Johnny Alpha, but change it just enough not to get sued, you know.
So if anybody from Vice Press is listening, next year, 2018, will be 40 years of Strontium Dog.
Yeah.
So if we could have the two Johnnies poster from Carlos, I'm sure they've, you know, we could sell those for them quite easily as well, couldn't we?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. If not, that's another commission I'll have to think about.
So if you want to get your copy of the SD Agency Files Volume 1, it's available from the 2000 AD store for $15.99 or $9.99 digital. And it's an essential volume, really, Steve, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, sort of people have said, you know, oh, can I skip sort of some of the early Dread sort of stuff? And, you know, you can do, but... you know, I'm a bit of a sort of completist, but certainly with this, it seems to find its feet a lot quicker than Dread does. It's, you know, by about halfway through, you know, that's how you're going to find it. Apart from, even within that, you know, it does sort of vary where it goes to sort of war stories. It's a bit more serious, and then you've got the capers, but everything seems to be in there from the start, sort of from a world building sort of point of view.
Yeah, marvellous. And of course, we've got it sets things up perfectly for what's to come next, which is Portrait of a Mutant.
Yeah.
So great stuff. Okay, fabulous. I mean, it was, you know, it was marvellous dipping back into these old stories. I've really enjoyed it again and just marvelling at Carlos's work, but also, you know, John's and Alan's inventiveness and their imagination in coming up with these great stories, these great capers.
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, obviously when we were sort of doing the short film, you know, ploughed through, well, I sort of ploughed through, enjoyed sort of like revisiting sort of some of the stories and going, seeing whether there's anything or, you know, lines or sort of concepts that we could sort of cherry pick, you know. Obviously, you know, we were pretty familiar with it, but, you know, there might have been things that just sort of passed us by and going, oh, right, we can nab that.
Well, of course, and that takes us perfectly to what I want to talk about next, which, of course, is guest projects. And last time you were telling us about some of the background of Judge Minty. So it will appear on the internet, I think, a week or so after this episode goes out.
Yeah.
Search Destroy, a Strontium Dog fan film with you as co-director and co-writer this time, Steve?
Yeah, kind of. Probably, yeah, it's all mixed role sort of thing. You know, we just sort of like bash things sort of like backwards and forwards. You know, with Steve, I mean, I sort of like did the basic outline. I mean, originally it sort of started off as being a lot shorter, and it was going to be more of an advert, really. It was more about the cost of sort of being a strontium dog. So it's Electronut costs 5,000 creds a zap, or Time Bombs cost 20,000 creds. You know, so it was a bit like a Barclaycard sort of thing, you know, where the money would be going up and down and up and down, where they get a bounty and then they sort of end up sort of using the using the money on weaponry. And that was the original idea. And then we thought, oh, no, if we're going to do something, we'll do a story. And we just basically sort of looked at, like, okay, you know, what can we tell, and you know, within our budget, we kind of sort of cherry picked all our, you know, bits and pieces. We didn't really want to sort of tell an exact story, because you know how it ended. And also there's not that many sort of stories in there that are sort of like doable on a fan film budget, you know, because people say, you know, say, oh, you should do this next. And it's like, you know, we've had people honestly asking for, you know, us to do the Apocalypse War, you know, and it's like, it's not going to happen.
That's going to be tricky.
Yeah. I mean, sort of people said, oh, you know, you could do The Killing. And it's like, well, the Killing's got like a cast of 100, and you've got like costumes for the cast of 100, you know, it's like, it's not doable. It's, so yeah, I mean, we sort of, you know, went through and sort of like had a look and go, okay, we'll nab that idea. And, or nab that character. And, but there's nobody sort of we didn't want to sort of do anything sort of where, you know, people say, oh, I hope Styx is in it. So, well, if we put Styx in it, so what could we do with him? We can't kill him off, really, you know, unless we invent another Styx character, you know. So any characters that you see that you recognise are probably fairly safe from harm. Anybody who's, you know, I don't know who that is, no, they're probably going to die.
And of course, I mean, as you say, because you've got the recognisable characters, you've got Johnny and Wolf, obviously.
Yeah.
You've got Harvey.
Yeah.
There's a brief appearance, I think, from Durham Red.
Yeah, there's Durham Red and Midden Face, Kidney. But they're literally sort of like, you know, sort of, you know, 10 seconds or like 20 seconds or like, you know, like cameos.
Yeah.
Because it's really just about, you know, Johnny and Wolf. That was the sort of the core sort of thing. I mean, people were asking, like, is the Gronk in it? I just had no desire to put, you know, the Gronk was fine when you were 10, but I think it'd be immensely irritating, sort of. And, you know, we always sort of like say, well, you know, Wolf's wearing him, so, which is technically correct. So it's one of those characters, like, you really don't want to be sort of dragging along a CGI sort of character through this whole sort of this whole sort of thing. It'd just be a lead weight around you. So no Gronk, I'm afraid.
No Gronk. But you do have, obviously, appearances from several well-known 2000 AD fans in the sort of supporting cast.
Yeah.
There's some recognisable faces that people will know from conventions and various gatherings and so on. And then you've got professional actors Matthew Simpson and Kevin Horsham playing Johnny and Wolf. How long did you have with them? How many days did you have for shooting with them?
I know, it's probably about a week overall. It tended to be sort of either 1 day or 2 days, all like shoots. It's more, you know, the big problem was just sort of, you know, going from location to location. But yeah, it was probably about, you know, probably about a week overall. I mean, there were some sort of some shoots where we needed Matt but didn't need Kev. I mean, the main problem we had was sort of Kev's hair. It's all like, you know, growing and sort of growing and getting cut and sort of things like that, we can just about sort of justify it. You go, oh, he's had a haircut. It's been a long mission. So
right, okay.
But I think, you know, unless you're looking out for it, it's sort of you'll probably sort of notice. But
and locations this time. I mean, last time with Minty, you were telling me about you know, Welsh quarries and so on. Where were you shooting this time?
We were shooting a few places. Dungeness is probably the prime location, which is about the only place in the UK that would sort of like do for a sort of a western looking sort of town. And yeah, I mean, that was interesting. I mean, we it's got a big sort of nuclear power station by there, so and it's also got a bit of a sort of like nature reserve sort of like close by, so that they were very sort of hot on sort of making sure, you know, you didn't sort of disturb the residents, and also there was absolutely no chance of using a drone for any shots. Not that we had one at the time, but there was even like asking, like, you haven't got a drone. So no, and it's basically a sort of like a shingle sort of a shingle beach with there was a shack which looked like it's an old sort of like Marconi testing station, but it's like a wooden shack that's fairly sort of like dilapidated. It's just pretty much falling down, and that served as a sort of like a backdrop, just because you couldn't see the sea, and you know, you'd have like a, you know, desert as far as the eye could see. But if you went the other direction, about sort of 100 yards, there was a pub, which was, you know, which was great for like people to like, you know, retire to, so like, you know, between sort of things. But we were trying to find sort of a place with any of these sort of things. It's a public place, so you're trying not to find somewhere that's too popular. And Dungeness is sort of like strange. It's very isolated. But you do get people sort of like, you know, walking about. And as soon as the weather sort of like, you know, cleared up, you know, you get people in the background, and then it becomes a sort of like, oh, do I wait for them? I can't really sort of tell them to move. Do I wait for them to sort of, you know, move of their own accord, or do I just digitally paint them out? So I just digitally painted them out, and it was it was save time on the day, and then sort of spend a couple of hours sort of back on the PC, and just go, right, okay, you're gone.
Right.
But
lots,
yeah,
of post-production, I mean, work to be done.
Yeah, I mean, the post-production is the sort of thing that's been a bit of a killer, even more than Minty was, because, you know, even just like with Johnny, you know, his eyes have got to glow, so there's a lot of it's not a particularly difficult task, but it's just there's a lot of it, and it's not even, I mean, the film's about 20 minutes long, but you're not sort of like just doing 20 minutes worth, you're doing more than that, because you don't know sort of like in the edit sort of how much, you know, sort of how much you're going to sort of like, you cut it back, so you just go, right, I'll just do that bit of that shot, you know. And so it's sort of time consuming, so, you know, we got that, and there's sort of things, I don't think it's much of a spoiler to say, things like the Electronux, you know, so that's another thing you got to sort of have effects for, whereas with Minty, a lawgiver, well, you just got a muzzle flash for the most part, and you're not having to sort of do it frame by frame, so it's just a lot of that sort of that, you know, time-consuming sort of tedious sort of stuff to do. So Dungeness was one location, and we had a place called Fort Borstal, which is it's not a made-up name. It's like an old sort of Napoleonic, I think, sort of like fort near Maidstone, I think. It's very sort of it looks like quite modern in some parts of the exterior, and you go, right, that'll do for this sort of like base that we need. And then the sort of like corridors with sort of very, 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 very steep stairs. It's just sort of, you know, there's a like, stairways that sort of like, you know, go down a little flat bit and then sort of up again. And there was no lights down there, so we did like, you know, a bit of a recce, and we got this sort of like shot of, like, you know, Kevin, Matt just ran all the way up these sort of stairs, and sort of like Matt sort of like stumbled sort of like halfway up, and sort of, it's kind of like, please don't do that, you know, sort of
Right.
Try
the blooper reel.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that's all I did. I stuck it on the sort of thing with a bit of the Rocky theme sort of like going on. But there was Fort Borsal, and we did a few sort of pickups at the interior of Magna, where we sort of shot Minty in the exterior. Where else was there? There was a place called Wentworth Woodhouse, which sort of stately home.
Oh, right.
There's a lot, bits and pieces, sort of like, all over. And that's the glad we're sort of like, past that bit. It's, getting up at sort of 5 a.m. or 4 a.m. and, doing a shoot and not knowing what the weather's going to be like. It's, that's the.
Stressful and demanding, it sounds.
It's fine when you're actually there. It's more the worry about scheduling everybody and liaising with sort of sort of people. I mean, people are like broadly fine, but you do get sort of like companies where they're just not getting back to you about sort of stuff, and you're sort of trying to work out, can we have this location or not? And all the ones that we sort of like dealt, that we ended up sort of filming with, they were great. But it's just the logistics is sort of like the least fun part of it, coming up with the story and sort of doing all the sort of pre-production and making the costumes and things like that. That's fun. Shooting it is sort of, is pretty fun, but just all the tedium of organizing it, that's not so much fun.
That's hard work.
Yeah, I mean, sort of studio tenders to deal with sort of most of that. So, I think it was down to me. I probably would have just gone, oh, I'm just going to do it all CGI.
Do it all in post.
Yeah, do it all in post.
So we're talking about Stephen Stellachini, of course.
Yeah.
Your co-director. You mentioned costume design. I mean, we saw when we got to see some of the production images appearing on the 2080 forums and the Facebook page, and just thinking, you've nailed the costumes and the characters, the look of them.
Yeah, I mean, sort of Steve. It was a bit of a sort of a group effort. The helmets, or like Dan Stark to do the helmet manually. An actual physical sort of sculpt, and it was taking a while, and I thought, we've got to get this all going. So 3D printers were starting to become affordable. I sort of looked at it, and because my background sort of is 3D, I could sort of sculpt something and sort of like then give it to Dan to print. So we looked at like the cost of actually outsourcing the 3D printing, and it was ridiculous. To print something like the Electronux, they were sort of talking about 150 quid, 200 quid. And I go, if we're going to do a helmet and a gun and sort of things like that, we might as well have bought a printer.
Yeah.
So Steve and myself, sort of, we went halves on the 3D printer, and basically said, right, here you are, Dan. I made the model of the helmet and sliced it up into sort of parts, because the helmet's bigger than the printer. So sliced it up, sort of gave it to Dan, sort of like, okay, print that and sort of join it together.
We'll put it together.
Yeah, and did the Electronux as well, and sort of Dan did the Westinghouse, and I did sort of a few other little bits and pieces for the bandolier sort of stuff on Johnny's sort of outfit. It's all like, I mean, the first go, I mean, we did like a little mini print sort of like to try and work out scale. Dan had like a sort of Action Man type sort of figure, one of the sort of like 12-inch Hong Kong sort of like toys. And so we printed one out, sort of like small scale helmet, small scale, and sort of like put that on and go, okay, that looks okay. And there was a few revisions. We sort of went backwards and forwards with Carlos, so he was involved sort of quite early on, because just didn't want to sort of do it and then Carlos go, yeah. So the actual look of the helmet, I mean, the sort of design, sort of like, between me, Dan and Carlos, do that. And then sort of Dan's got a great eye for sort of scale, because we didn't want, it's trying to get this sort of helmet, it's got to fit, you've actually got to be able to get it on, which is the sort of the tricky bit. But you can't make it sort of too big, otherwise it'd be ridiculous. You know, it'd be like sort of like Bubblehead. And it was the thing that I was like most worried about. You know, it's like whether you just look at it and just go, oh, that looks ridiculous. You know, it's, I mean, I'm sort of like, you know, used to it, but somebody else will like not seeing it. It's, you know, it can be a bit of a weird sort of like look. And even like when shooting it, it can be a bit sort of tricky where it works better if it's sort of sitting a bit lower. So the sort of like the curve of the brow of it sort of like matches the curve of the brow of the actor wearing it.
Yeah.
And it does sort of shift around a little bit, so it's, but you know, generally you go, oh yeah, that looks pretty cool. So yeah, I was doing that, and sort of Dan did the pads, and a lady called Victoria, sort of Ultimate Leather, she did the costume, and that sort of took a while. And it's one of those sort of things where, you know, it never quite works out. You know, we were a bit limited sort of in like the colours that were available. Could we looked at it and go, oh, we want to make it sort of different from Dread. So we'll make it suede. Yeah, it's sort of, I don't know. Leather might have been sort of like a better way to, I mean, I think it's like leather on the stripes. But I'm, you know, thinking back, I might have gone sort of like, you know, gone with like black stripes rather than sort of white, you know, white stripes. But it was all these sort of like considerations, like, all right, if we're going to film it on green screen, it's a green costume, like how green can it be before it becomes a problem? And we're sort of trying to hit that sort of sweet spot. So in the end, it's a bit of a bottle green, the actual costume, but in post I sort of like tweaked it, so I sort of make it a bit more olive,
right,
olive green, so it sort of seems a bit more natural and a bit less sort of Robin Hood. It's interesting. And sort of Steve did a lot of work on the other costumes, with sort of wolf stuff and sort of like, yeah, Dan did the pads for that. So yeah, it was tougher than, you know, the sort of judgmenty costumes.
Yes.
Just because, you know, you could get away with the bad guys being sort of, you know, a bit sort of like ragged and just sort of thrown together, and sort of it's all very post-apocalyptic. Whereas with this one, you're trying to get all the costumes to sort of fit in with sort of like what Johnny's sort of design sort of look like. So, you know, with like Harvey's costume, you know, which Steve did, you know, you're sort of trying to get the sort of like the helmet to look, you know, a bit like sort of Johnny's sort of helmet. So it's got those curves and organic sort of look to it. And, it was probably, I don't know. I mean, sort of Dan says it's sort of like, I don't know, it's like about 20 sort of like different pieces to the, you know, the costume. You take the sort of like the Johnny Alpha costume off, and it's just got all these sort of like numbers on the backside of the sort of pieces of like what goes where and things like that. It's more like a kit. Whereas, you know, with the Judgmenty costume, it's like it's two shoulder pads. It's obvious where sort of things go. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I mean, we did have sort of things where, like, his the gauntlet sort of embrace sort of things, they're on the wrong arm sort of like in a couple of shots. So
right,
yeah, so continuity sort of like people will have a field day.
Okay, I've gone to strontiumdogfanfilm.com and followed the link to the Flickr page, which has got all the production and promotional images, mm-hmm. Including the poster, and of course Stephen Stellachini's commission,
yep,
from Carlos, which reproduces the poster, which is just, you know, fantastic. What a tribute to the actual film itself.
Yeah.
Carlos himself doing, you know, the movie version of Johnny and Wolf.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all like, you know, Steve sort of thought it'd be nice with the actors as well, so we'll see something where it's, you know, tweaked a little bit to, you know, somewhere between the, like, you know, the comic and the movie version. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I saw a cosplayer who was cosplaying as Wolf, but he'd obviously sort of like taken his cues from the our film, you know, and you see these sort of things. You know, I saw it a lot with sort of the Minty stuff, where people would just sort of like take a photo and you know, do sort of fan art of that. I mean, I've seen about sort of four different sort of tattoos of Greg Staples from the photo that I took of him as sort of like him as Dread. And it's sort of it's pretty weird when you sort of like see it like that. But, you know,
it must be, you know, it must be an amazing sort of tribute to you when you see somebody cosplaying as Wolf from your film.
Yeah.
I'm also looking down, because I presume, did you 3D 3D print a couple of figures of Johnny and Alf.
Yeah, well, we had there was a couple of shots where we wanted digital doubles where they're on the skimmers. Because with Minty, what we did was, I mean, we shot live action, and it was just basically Edmund sitting on a box, you know, with a couple of like, you know, handlebars and things like that. But that was like a flat image. So the there's a place in sort of East London called My 3D Twin who print out figures, so people go in and get their cells scanned, and they do.
Oh, that's how you do it.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, what it is there's like about 60. Cameras, and it sort of takes a photo from all these sort of angles, and they're arranged in like a dome.
Yeah,
some immensely clever sort of software then creates a 3D model from those. So it's sort of I mean, I've got the software myself, but I haven't got 60 cameras. So we sort of like took those, and then we had sort of sort of scans done. I thought, oh yeah, we'll sort of try it and just print it out. And there was also little things like I wanted to sort of try some virtual reality sort of stuff and these sort of little sort of side sort of projects. But once we had them, I thought, oh, right, we'll sort of print them out and see what the printer sort of does. But then we got Lee Shepherd to paint them, because the printer we had was just monochrome.
Beautifully painted as well, I think.
Yeah, yeah, it did like, you know, an amazing job. So sort of Carlos has got a couple of those, and Matt and Kev have sort of like one each. But so yeah, you get sort of into these sort of little sidelines, which sort of takes away from like when you're doing all the tedious sort of stuff. Though it's very tempting to just go, right, let's just do the fun stuff, and then, you know, the film never gets finished. So
yeah. So I would encourage people to go to strontiandogfanfilm.com, follow the link to the Flickr page, see all these lovely images. You'll also see Steve Longdon and Guy Robbins, both of whom have been guests on this podcast. They're there in their Mutant Search Destroy uniforms as background characters. Great stuff. So when did filming take place? Was this sort of early in 2016?
Oh, no, it was before.
Even before that?
Yeah, I mean, it sort of spread out, because I think we were first asked about it, because Minty went online May 2013. Then we sort of talked about doing a Rogue Trooper sort of short as a follow-up, and we went to the Lakes in, I think, sort of October 2013, and John Wagner asked us, would you consider doing Strontium Dog? And that was a bit of a sort of like a burning bush moment.
Yes, okay. When John Wagner asks you if you will, and you say yes.
Thought we'd all end up in the river somewhere if we said no.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's a big tough guy, actually.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. No. John's lovely, but I think like John always says, how we recognise you, John. He goes, oh, I look like a bent cop, you know. So we sort of like, you know, did that, and I mean, Steve was sort of Steve's probably a bigger Rogue Trooper fan than I am. So I mean, I was sort of quite happy, but that brings with it its own sort of sense of sort of problems, about doing a blue guy and sort of not making it look too body paint, and what happens if it rains, what happens if when he sweats.
He starts to run, yeah.
Yeah, so glowing eyes are probably, and he's got glowing eyes as well. So sort of Strontium Dog is probably from a technical point of view, not massively more difficult, and also the characters are a bit more relatable. You know, it's you can have a bit of fun with it, whereas Rogue Trooper's probably maybe a bit sort of a bit less humour than Strontium Dog.
Yeah.
So we sort of started sort of working out sort of, you know, scripts and, you know, ideas and sort of things like that. But I think we probably didn't start filming until, I don't know, tail end of 2014. I'd have to look back. I mean, it's all a bit of a blur.
Right.
But we'd finished like the bulk of it sort of early sort of like 2016, and we did like a pickup sort of shoots, because we shot some sort of stuff against sort of green screen, and it looked a bit didn't look great. And so we go, we'll do a location, and shot that for I think that was January It was basically sort of, oh, you want to get this done before the 40th. So we had all these milestones. So the Thought Bubble last year was one.
Yeah.
And then sort of the 40th, you know, this, it's been a bit of a rolling sort of thing. It just got to that point where you say, all right, I need to get some money in, you know, I need to get some lot of paying work in. So even though we sort of like stopped, you know, finished filming.
Because obviously this is not for profit, has to be.
Yeah.
But as you say, you've got to pay the bills, so you've got to be off doing your real job.
Yeah.
How much of yours and Stephen's spare time did the pre and, in your case, particularly the post-production take up?
Enough.
Is it just frightening to consider?
Yeah, it's just, I mean, from my side, it's more, you know, like the post-production is sort of, that's the sort of the real sort of time-consuming bits. I mean, yeah, you could sort of work and then sort of do in the evenings, but you really don't want to, you know, it's all like, then it just really feels like a treadmill. So, I mean, I freelance, so if work sort of slack, then, you know, I can just say, all right, I'll do a bit of that. But, you know, there were points where I was turning down sort of like, you know, paying work to do sort of New Dog, you know, it was mainly sort of like, you know, before the 40th and sort of like before Thought Bubble, where I go, right, I've got to, you know, do that. And then the sort of heats off a little bit after that. But, you know, when we had the sort of showing at the 40th, you know, I sort of spoke to the editor and he goes, it's all Joe Soap on the 2008 forums. And he'd sort of said that, wonder whether like adding a little bit to the extra, and it was always like in the back, a little bit to the beginning, and sort of reordering it. And oh god,
spotted something else. So we did
an extra sort of like shoot, which just involved sort of two characters, sort of like the main bad guy, and another guy who's another Strontium dog. But that was more about like the location. Because it needed to match roughly with Dungeness. We sort of talked to Dungeness, and they don't allow shooting at the weekends, and the actor couldn't do, it wouldn't sort of like tie up. So we were looking at sort of like duplicate sort of places, and sort of settled on Brighton, who were very amenable. And they're sort of like, right, shingly enough. We've got very limited sort of shots that we need to do. And it looks great, you know, I sort of rattled through. And I basically sort of like edited it and sort of like added some basic effects in, sort of like within a day of sort of like shooting it. And I think it was just because it was a fresh shot. Whereas I think, you know, once you've sort of seen something sort of like a thousand times before, you just go, oh, God. whereas this was something new. And now it's just sort of slotting it in. And it's mainly the sort of sticking point is I don't want to sort of, you know, mess with things too much, because all the sounds, you know, hopefully locked down, you know, by now. And you start sort of tweaking sort of things, and you start having to unpick everything. And it just becomes a real sort of a real chore to, you know, to do. But, you know, it'll be better for it. And it'll make the opening a bit stronger.
Well, we'll talk about its official release date in just a moment, but you mentioned a couple of preview showings at the 40th, and then back in November 16, on the 6th November, I was there, and I was lucky enough to be at the Thought Bubble convention with you, and you very kindly invited me to a preview showing of a sort of an early version in the evening. When, of course, we had John Wagner sitting in the front row, you know, that's sort of like a tick for me off the bucket list. I was sitting in a small private cinema with John Wagner, and he got to watch it. I mean, was that a nerve-wracking screening when you're thinking John's going to be sitting there?
Well, kind of, but I wasn't in there anyway. So. There was a slight sort of issue with the location, where they'd blocked off. There was some sort of show going on in the sort of like the shopping centre.
But there was some slight difficulty getting to the actual.
Yeah, I stood out at the beginning and was like directing people and sort of, you know, so I use that as my excuse. But I didn't watch Minty sort of either. So I'm just sort of, you know, but by that point I'm sick of the sight of it. So
it's too much for you at that stage.
Yeah, I mean, I watched it. We ran it a second time, and so I watched it a second time. Like, oh, yeah, that's all right.
Presumably, you came in though when John Wagner gave his thumbs up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Positive endorsement. He thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, no, I was too busy thinking of Jack Daniels and Coke. So it's that's sort of like, you know, I came in afterwards and sort of I'm very honest with, like, you know, like, you know, when people are like, oh, you know, we like with Minty, you know, oh, you know, it's the best thing ever and sort of things like that. It's, I think it's just that sort of that nostalgia of seeing something sort of like, you know, that's faithful. And you can overlook sort of like, you know, the budget limitations. I mean, on this one, you know, there's certain bits where, you know, the budget didn't matter. You know, there's like the interrogation bit. And it's like, well, even if I had a lot of money, it's like, well, what else, you know, would you have done? And it's more where you sort of are trying to sort of, you know, go into the sort of big blockbustery sort of like action sort of thing, you know, and that's where you sort of, you know, you sort of like, you feel the sort of the restrictions of trying to do it on a fan film budget. You know, with these sort of things, it's like you can either, you know, wait around for somebody with a lot of money to do it, or, and it might never happen. You know, or you just go, right, we'll do it, and, you know, see what we can do out of it, see what we can get out of it, and you know, what lessons we can learn and things like that. So I think it's all, you know, better to do it and you know, see how it sort of turns out than just, you know, have this imaginary film. They go, oh, if only I'd done that, and it would have been brilliant, and you never know. So it's you know, it's a fun experience. It can be grueling, but
it does sound grueling. A lot of the actual shooting work and then the pre and post production work does seem like an awful lot of work for you and Stephen Stellachini. And I have to commend and compliment you on everything you've done, because the version I saw, I know it was, you know, it was an early version, but that was fantastic. And I'm really looking forward to seeing the finalised version when it appears on the internet very shortly.
Yeah, cheers. Yeah, I mean, you know, we'll stick it on YouTube and put it on like Vimeo as well. And sort of, you know, people can sort of have a look. I mean, it's...
And then it's, you can't tinker with it anymore after that.
You can't on YouTube, but you can on Vimeo.
Oh, right.
So, okay. Yeah, I mean, I've entertained the idea of sort of like, oh, maybe I'll sort of like, you know, come back to, you know, shots and sort of things like that. But, it probably will be just, I mean, like with Minty, I just sort of like, stick it on there and then sort of like, you know, walk away from it. You know, I could go back to it and go, oh, I can make that bit better and that bit better. But, yeah, it's sort of... I think it's probably better just to sort of walk away from it and then
move on. So when can we see the finalised version on the internet? What's the actual release date going to be?
23rd of May.
So 23rd of May, 17, just shortly after this episode comes out, hasten your way to strontiandogfanfilm.com. I presume you'll find it in its Vimeo form, and it'll also be on YouTube.
Yeah, yeah. We're not sure whether it'll go on the Minty channel or whether we create a new sort of like channel for that. It's we should have planned ahead a little bit more, really. You know, probably called it something more generic. You know, if we knew that we were going to do more than one. But yeah, sort of. We'll let everybody know. I mean, the Facebook page is probably the best place to you know, to find out these things.
Okay, excellent, Steve. Really looking forward to the final version and getting to see it again. It's just, you know, Minty was stunning. Search Destroy is stunning. The amount of work that seems to have gone into it, it staggers me how much you've done while actually having to fit in your paying work in and around that. Absolutely astonishing. And goodness knows what it's cost you and Stephen to do it.
We don't like to think about that.
No, I'm sure you don't.
We're in a state of denial about that.
Yeah, that's right. Fabulous. Are there any thoughts or plans about a third fan film, or is that give you the stuff of nightmares?
No, I mean, sort of Steve's ruled himself out of that.
Right. It's back to the paying jobs now.
Yeah, well, I mean, sort of, we got an idea for our own IP and sort of, I mean, it's not just a sort of, you know, the fact that the time it takes up, it's the hoops that you have to jump through and sort of, I think we've had enough of sort of, you know, to sort of run stuff by Rebellion. So, you know, it'd be nice to just sort of like, you know, do our own thing. and you know, maybe make some money out of it, or at least not lose money on it.
Sure.
You know, it's we've done that. I mean, and out of the other sort of like properties, it's like, well, you know, what else, you know, would you do? It's like, you know, Rogue Trooper is the only obvious one, but I've got absolutely no desire. I've done my glowy eye character. I'm not gonna do another one.
Okay.
And at the other sort of like Nemesis is just like not achievable in, you know, on a fan film budget. And
no,
I think basically anything that's achievable on a fan film budget out of the remaining ones, I'm probably not that interested in doing. And and the other ones that I'd love to do are not achievable on that sort of budget. It's I'd like to see some other people sort of like take a crack at it. You know, I think we've done our duty. It's I'm surprised that sort of, you know, more people sort of haven't done it, but maybe they're just not mad enough.
Well, I'm sure I speak for 2000 AD fans everywhere, Steve, when I say thank you to yourself and to Stephen Sterlachini for Judge Minty and for Search and Destroy. Job well done.
Oh, thanks.
Absolutely fabulous.
Well, thanks. I just say, like, you know, wouldn't have been able to do it without Dan and, you know, everybody who sort of like who pitched in. It's, you know, sort of like fans and...
A lot of fan involvement.
A lot of fan involvement, and yeah, I mean, it's
a lot of fan excitement and buzz about the actual final film coming out shortly.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, Steve. I know we had an idea we might talk about some other 2000 AD film possibilities, but I think I'm going to save that for when I next have you on the podcast, if that's all right.
Yeah, hopefully something might have been announced by then.
Exactly. We might have something to talk about. Anything else you want to say about the first volume of Strontium Dog or the Search and Destroy movie before we sort of wrap it up?
No, I mean, I think sort of, you know, I think we sort of like covered it sort of, you know, pretty extensively. It's
I think so. And we haven't given away any spoilers.
No.
Search and Destroy Agency Files 1 is essential, and Search Destroy the Strontium Dog fan film is an absolute essential, and there'll be links to... the pages and the Facebook group in the show notes for this episode.
Lovely.
And thank you all for listening to Mega City Book Club. You find a complete list of all the episodes I've done so far and a list of the books to come in the next year on the Facebook page. Do follow the podcast on Twitter at MCBC Podcast, where you can also follow Strontium Dog Search Destroy fan film as well, I believe. And of course, you can email me comments and suggestions for future books if you'd like to get involved to mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. And you can find all these links at megacitybookclub.com, including links to the Search Destroy fan film page, which I keep mentioning. You'll find it all there, megacitybookclub.com. And that will do us. Getting ready for goodbyes. So until next time on Mega City Book Club, when we're passing judgment on another fine 2000 AD book, it's goodbye from me and...
It's goodbye from me.
Yeah.